The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to a brand new best podcast in... Did that shock you?
Yeah, man. That was like, welcome! And it like, kind of did a double take.
Oh, no. Okay. It was a little... It came on a little strong. Okay. Welcome... to a brand new best podcast in baseball. I'm joined this week by C. Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic, longtime baseball writer in Cincinnati, and we're going to talk about
baseball stuff.
Oh, baseball stuff.
No, we're going to talk about the National League Central, the Cincinnati Reds. If there's an X factor in the division, is that X factor Tito Francona? Or, you know, what Trent makes of the Cardinals, who came in and swept a doubleheader from the Reds to get as many wins in one day on the road as they had in the previous month on the road. That's all coming up in a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and I told you already who's joining me. It's Trent Rosecrans, C. Trent Rosecrans by his byline of The Athletic. He's laughing through this whole thing. I'm going to have to do so much editing, I already know, but it's great to see you, pal. It's great to talk with you. Look at us. We got these college lanyards. We're so hip and cool. We're waiting on a rain delay at Great American Ballpark after a doubleheader the day before. Trent, give me a 30,000-foot view before we drill down on these Cincinnati Reds. Am I crazy to think that they have maybe one of the more talented rosters?
No. I mean, like, if you just look at talent, I mean, well, heck, you start with Ellie De La Cruz, and that's a lot of talent. But yeah, you go around that infield, you look. You have Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, who I'm big on, even though his numbers are not great so far this year. Don't worry. I think he's going to come around. Noelvi Marte is an uber-talented kid. So you keep going around, and they've got a lot of talent. Then you go to the pitching staff, Hunter Green, who we were seeing take that next step, I believe. And Nick Lodolo, who when he's on, he's good as anybody. You know, and then you even go in the minors. Well, he's not in the minors. He's actually on the IL. But you have Rhett Lauder, and then Chase Burns is coming, and he's looking like he's been better than... He's taken the same path that Lauder did last year. Both right-handers taken with the Reds' first pick out of
Wake Forest.
Yeah. And, you know, Lauder didn't pitch at all after he got drafted in 2023, but then worked his way up through the minors to the big leagues last year at the end of the year, made like six starts, had a one-something ERA. Chase Burns is on that same kind of trajectory. It's just whether they'll need him then, or there'll be a spot then, or if he stays healthy, those things. But, you know, I think as good as Rhett Lauder looked, Chase Burns is a guy who has a higher ceiling. And we're talking about that. So there are some, like, there is a lot of talent. And, you know, if you just do the talent bit by bit, they're up there with anybody in this division, if you ask me.
So what holds them back?
Well, it's experience, I think, is a big part of it. Injuries has been a big part of it, too. And also, we're just a month into the season. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And that can change either way, where somebody runs away with it. But I don't know. I don't see any of these five teams as running away with anything.
And the Cubs are playing really well, and they're all done with... I mean, I think it's noteworthy that they're all done with the Dodgers and the Padres on their schedule, so they don't have that speed bump that the other teams have. Done with Arizona, too. So they still have Colorado to go. So I think their schedule, you might suggest that, look, if they got through this thicket with this record, maybe they're the team that runs away.
I used to get caught up in that.
Yeah.
And I don't as much because really...
Because you're older?
I'm older and wiser, or just older. But, you know, it's not always who you play, but when you play them.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, like, totally great. Yeah.
And so, you know, right now, yeah, you could have been like, oh, man, got through the Dodgers. Well, maybe down the line, they're on their 58th pitcher, and it's only someone making $20 million. And so, like, that can be something. Last year, the Reds, let's see, what were they, 16-14 the other day? And they were 16-14 after the same amount of games that year. Last year, and I think the Cubs had an even better record. I looked this up. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of the same record, and the Reds were done with the Dodgers by that point. So, oh, well, hey.
Yeah.
They got this out. I just don't... I think with baseball, it's way too hard, way too easy to get ahead of yourself.
Sure.
Stuff takes off. And that's like when you're looking at, you know, like, well, oh, this guy's... got his last rehab start this week. Who's coming out of the rotation in a week? Just wait. Somebody's going
to
be hurt.
Oh, yeah. That's the Larry Plough principle. Yeah. I don't have to make a roster. That's what I've called. I learned it when I was covering the Blues, and I would ask those questions like, well, this guy's coming back from injury. Who are you going to move out? They're playing. He's like, it'll solve itself. The Plough principle. It'll solve itself. An injury will happen. Performance will dictate it. He goes, don't make a roster move until you have to make a roster move, because by the time you have to make it, a lot of times it reveals itself. I want to take a look at the division and start with the notion, or start with this question. Can we agree that, like, teams have kind of cycles of contention? You know, that the Cardinals resisted the down cycle for a couple decades. The Dodgers are impervious to cycles now. The Yankees spend their way out of it. Things like that. But, I mean, even the Reds, we'll see, right? Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know that the Yankees have.
Right.
Or will.
Well, they have one. Yeah.
You know, the Mets, you know. Right. And the Dodgers seem impervious now, but we've seen these things fall before. That the Yankee dynasty fell, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, it's tough. It's easier for them to extend. The teams with a lot of money, it's easier to extend the window. Will always be that window when you see maybe talent drying up. And that's what happened with the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, and there are a multitude of factors. I mean, I keep thinking about this. What if Oscar Tavares doesn't?
Well, the Cardinals bring out, yeah.
And and it just is, that was a guy. He was.
Yep. Yeah, he was a difference maker. He was the middle order hitter, all that stuff that they haven't been able to develop really. I mean, Matt Carpenter was an exceptional hitter from outside the organization. But when they talk about like the next generation, they came after Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols. So it was like, well, who's going to be that guy? And you can't go chasing it.
And they did. And they chased it with big names who have played well for the Cardinals, but they got the back end of Paul Goldschmidt, the back end of Nolan Arenado.
Right.
And that's what happens when you chase with names, is then you're constantly looking, and you're going to have rough after they're done, as opposed to when you chase with youth, that's also a difficult, you know, we've seen these teams that tank. We've seen the Astros, the Cubs, or whatever, but we've seen a lot more who've tried it and didn't get there.
Yeah,
the Reds have done it a couple times.
Well, where are the Tigers? The Tigers only now are emerging from multiple attempts. Do we see any light at the end of the tunnel for the White Sox? You could argue that the Red Sox have been, you know, oscillating between from one end to the other. I mean, they
traded Mookie Betts again.
Right.
Like, they're not immune
right.
to all this. Everybody is like, you'll see a lot of pearl clutching around here. Like, what happens when Ellie De La Cruz leaves? It's like, there's three seasons between now and then.
He gets $1 billion.
Yeah. If he continues on the trajectory and he's getting $1 billion, he's probably not getting it from the Cincinnati Reds.
No?
No.
Oh. He's getting $1 billion. Yeah. The Cardinals, to their credit, staved off the down cycle. But they also, you know, while attempting to do that, didn't go over the edge by trying to push to the final brink to make themselves a sure thing contender. They were light on pitching, and they kept saying, well, we'll develop that, but they just didn't, and so they didn't spend on pitching. And then they go and spend on pitching, and they get this down cycle year for Goldschmidt and Arenado, and the offense vanishes. So it was very much like they missed their chance to really push in and not even push in all that much, but to push in with like signing Gibson a year earlier, right? Or going after Sonny Gray for the trade, not for the free agent. You know, like they just missed that syncing up their spending on pitching and their acquisition of Arenado and Goldschmidt. And there are financial reasons why they didn't do it, and that's fine. But the fallout from that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, and you see it all the time, and it's really difficult to get all those things to line up. And shoot, even when they do, it can be fleeting. Like the Cubs, you know, I remember one writer, it's like in 2000, I think it was 13 or 14, I just remember being there, the Cubs are in town. I was talking to a Cubs writer. He's like, oh. I was like, man, I think they're going to be pretty darn good. And he's like, oh, no, they'll never be good. They're awful and blah, 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 ownership, blah. And then they went in 2016, and it's like, the next year, it's like, ooh, there's some warts. No, they're never going to be bad again. Ownership is this. I'm like, same guy.
Same hyperbole. Yeah.
And, you know, maintaining is hard.
Yeah.
And we've seen it. That's why, like, you don't see repeat champions. We haven't, the Yankees haven't won since
2009. Yeah. The Cardinals have.
16 years.
The Cardinals have a World Series.
The Royals have a World Series and an appearance.
Well, and they've been to twice as many World Series in that time as the Yankees have, because the Yankees just got back there this past year and long. So where are these teams in this division, these five teams, where are they in their cycle to contend? The Cubs window is open. One year, Kyle Tucker, they know they have Kyle Tucker. This year, that is very much a clear and present indication that their window to contend is now. Mm-hmm. Would you say the Brewers are on the backside of their window to contend?
I would say so, in part because we've already seen one key piece leave.
Willy Adames.
Christian Yelich is kind of in that, what do you know, what are you going to get from him physically?
Autumn of his career.
Yeah. The pitching, you know, they lost some of those guys.
Corbin Burns gone.
And it seemed like they were
replenishing. Devin Williams gone.
They seemed like they were replenishing all the times, but, you know, have they? And that's a tough thing to do. So I say they were, but they are kind of like this past like 10 years what the Cardinals were the year before. It's like, I'm not exactly sure how they're doing this, but I know they'll be there in September and October, right? And it's just like we used to always call it the Cardinal Devil magic. It just seemed like it went over to Milwaukee, where they were more than the sum of their parts. And at some point, maybe you're not quite there, and you even there have some down years, like we've seen with the Rays. You know, last year the Rays were supposed to be, like, they really thought they had a team to start the season, and then they didn't, and they made a lot of trades. But like, so those things are tricky, and it's so funny. Like, to me, this division for so many years, it always seems like you feel pretty confident about who's going to finish last. And then the other four you can just shake around. And, like, that last place thing changes occasionally.
Does it?
It has. I mean, it was the Cubs there for a little bit. It was the Pirates. It was the Reds.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
You know, like, those three teams have done it.
The Cardinals did it.
And the Cardinals were last year. Yeah. So,
well, last year they were second. 2 years ago, yeah. Two years ago.
Sorry. Okay. But, yeah. And so, like, that is... It seems like it's almost always that case. Like, at the beginning of the year, you're like, okay, feel pretty confident this is fifth place. And I don't feel confident about anything else. I have favorites for first, but I wouldn't be surprised by any of the other.
Missouri baseball fans, turn your takes into a little cash with Underdog, a fan favorite sports app where you can make picks to win money. Playing on Underdog is as easy as selecting higher or lower on players' stats like home runs, hits, strikeouts, and more. If you get them all right, you could win big cash prizes. Join the over 7 million fans on Underdog by downloading the app, signing up, and depositing today using promo code POST to get $50 when you make your first $5 entry, win or lose.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
So Cubs wide open, right in the sweet spot of contention. Brewers maybe moving past their window, trying to, you know, see who's going to go take them into the next one. The Pirates, would you agree, their owners are keeping their windows shut? They're sitting on the ledge, and they've latched it so that they're not in the window.
And I can see almost, I'm visualizing this in my head, but you almost have the Brewers and the Reds at kind of the same place.
On opposite sides?
But opposite sides.
That's what I wondered. What I was wondering. Like,
That's because you have these building blocks. You have the Ellie De La Cruz for the next 3 years. You have Hunter Green signed through 2028 or team control through 2029. So you have him there. Lodolo, Lauder, Burns, Andrew Abbott. These guys, they've got... You know, they have a window, and it is always for teams like the Reds, less so the Cardinals, but you know, also the Brewers. You have your window. You have these guys. You can't worry about where's Ellie De La Cruz going to play in 2029 or 2020 or 2030, because, well, you know what? He's going to be in Cincinnati in 2025 and 2026 and 2027.
Where do the Cardinals fit then in this? Like, where do they fit? Like, you described it well. Okay, so we have Cubs wide open, Pirates closed shut, Brewers descending, Reds ascending into our, you know, Viewmaster, and that's a data reference. But then where do the Cardinals fit into this?
I'm not sure, and I don't know that they know. You know, like...
Yeah. It's so fast. It's weird.
You know, there were many years where I'd always joke with you. They're like, I know what I can do in October. Anything I want. And Derek, I know you'll be working. Yeah. Enjoy that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I don't know that if I were you, I don't know that I'd make non-refundable vacation plans, but I wouldn't. If there was refundable, I could see making some plans.
What did you make of them in that doubleheader? Like, what did you make of... Like, do you watch that team play, that team pitch, and you go, that's not a good team? Or did you watch them and go, these are ingredients of a good team? Like, how'd you look at that?
I thought they got a good pitch, a well-pitched game.
They did? And power?
Yeah, and two well-pitched games. And, I mean, yeah, you beat up on a guy making his big league debut.
Yeah. They were very complimentary of Chase, Chase Petty afterwards. Super complimentary. They said that he was really hard to pick up in the shadows. Uh-huh. That explained all the foul balls, and they think that, like, you know, as those innings got longer, his stuff like softened a little bit, and
he couldn't get the put away pitch because he got to two strikes a lot,
right?
And it was the put away pitch,
right?
And that's hard. I mean, Hunter Green did the same thing, and he throws 103, you know, and so that is something you do. And I also thought it was interesting of who was here when Chase Petty made his debut, Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
Because that's who the Reds traded Sonny Gray to the Twins and got Chase Petty in return.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I just found that kind of interesting that Sonny was here. But that's interesting that the Cardinals were very complimentary of them.
Yeah, no, maybe they...
And like, again, he is probably their third or fourth best pitching prospect.
Right.
I mean, because he's certainly behind Lauder and Burns.
He's got really impressive stuff for third best. Well, so then maybe that's where the Cardinals want to get in the development game again. They are at the major league level, sort of in this limbo, they definitely are, where we can't quite put them in our little example of who's in the window contend. We wouldn't be shocked if they flew through it. We wouldn't be shocked if they flew into it, right? Like, we just, there's anything's possible.
They are birds. They fly.
Did you like that?
I did.
Oh, you picked up on that?
Yeah, I picked up what you're putting out.
Yeah, no, that was, I didn't script that at all or plan it. No, that just came. Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah. It's not, I mean, you know, it's what I do.
I actually, I told you, we were somewhere. Is it one of those, like, the spring training media day things where they have all these? I was talking to, like, Gabe Kapler or something. I was talking about something. He goes, that's a good way to put it. And I go, okay, I write for a living.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He just kind of looked at me like.
Usually it takes a keyboard to, but no, we can do it without the keyboard. So we can't quite place them, but they want to create this churn of talent beneath the surface of the majors.
Who doesn't? Right.
Well, I mean, like,
but how hard is that? Like, you've watched the Reds try to do it, yeah. And like, you think they're in a good spot right now, right? I don't want to put words in your mouth, yeah. But do you think they're in a good spot right now?
I do, but like, that doesn't guarantee anything, no, you know.
But how hard was it to get there?
It was tough because, you know, it's also like you talk about it and it's like, oh, you tank and you get draft picks. Well, different drafts are different.
Well, how many top draft picks did the Reds have here? The Cardinals they have one top seven pick,
yeah.
And they're going to get a five. That's two. That's the Reds have had a handful more of those.
And, you know, I can think of three number two overall the last couple of years. And one of those was Nick Senzel. Mm-hmm. And the next year was Hunter Green. But you look at that, like, Senzel draft, I mean, he was picked after Mickey Moniak. The people, I remember Zach and I went really hard at this. Zach Buchanan, who was at the Enquirer with me in 2017 when the Reds had the number two pick. It was the first time they'd had the number, they'd picked that high since taking Kurt Stillwell. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was we went hard after the draft that year when we profiled all the top guys. And looking back on it, 8 years, whatever it is now, the guys we profiled, like, we went places to profile them. Nick Senzel, Kyle Lewis, Mickey Moniak, Riley Pint, AJ Puck. There was a kid that Jay Groom. Mm-hmm. You know, those, there's Corey Ray.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were the top names in that draft.
Yeah.
And you go through that draft, and there are some other guys there. I mean, Will Smith was there, but he wasn't the Dodgers catcher, but he wasn't, like, a name.
I mean, that shows where what the Cardinals have in store. I mean, it's not – they can take a reset, transition, whatever, and feel like they know more about their team. But what they might learn about their team is that they're – few years further away, or the man, it's a hard slog.
It is so hard, and then sometimes there's just luck, you know.
You get Albert Pujols.
You get, I mean, I have, you've seen this picture. I've shown it to you 100 times because it still blows me away. 2018, after the trade deadline, Reds are out of it, and I go down to the Dominican Republic. I wanted to do a story about the academies and be there while the academy was there, while kids were at the academy. And I, you know, do this whole thing about my visit and what I saw. And I take these pictures because I had to be the photographer too. And I was like so lucky. I was like, oh man, I got Barry Larkin just happened to be there. Mm-hmm. And so I have Barry Larkin talking to there's like six 16-year-old shortstops. Nobody knows who they are. They're 16 years old. This is August. They just signed a month before. Mm-hmm. There's one on the end, skinny kid, 6 foot, 135. The last guy they signed in that class with their leftover money. Mm-hmm. He stays there, works through the pandemic. He thinks he's going to get cut. And during the pandemic, he grows like 5 inches. And the next thing you know, it's Ellie De La Cruz.
Was Jose Barrero there too?
No. He was already
up.
Okay. And he was Cuban.
Right, right. Well, I didn't know if he would have been at the academy. No.
So, yeah. So, no, Jose Barrero, because I think in 18.
So, what year was that again for the photo? Ella De La Cruz?
2018. You know the photo I'm talking about?
I know the photo you're talking about. Yeah. I'm trying to put it in the scope of, like, just this timeline to build a team.
Yeah, and I think Jose Barrero was in the Futures game, and that was the Reds' shortstop of the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, those things happen. And I mean, 2020 screwed a lot of things up.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jose Barrero's one of those guys that they really believed in, and you look at him and you think he should be, and he's just the best kid there is, and I wish him the best because I think a lot of Jose Barrero.
Who you got if you're picking an ace in the NL Central. Are you taking Hunter Green or Paul Skeens?
What am I taking them for?
To
win one game? To win consistently over the next couple of years?
What? Which one of these pitchers is, would you want to lead your team into the playoffs?
I think it's Skeens, but if I'm saying which one do I want for the next 5 years, it might be Hunter Green. Because I just, like, Skeens, I mean, Hunter's already had Tommy John, and that doesn't mean he's not going to, you know, hurt the elbow anyway, but he's kind of been through that. He's done a lot of those things, and I guess Skeens did too, but like, I think we all hold our breath with Skeens.
I think that Hunter Green has been in the league so that you're like, oh, he's in the league, and I've seen this guy for a while. And so you kind of overlook that he has been dominant this year, whereas Skeens came on like a comet, right? And there's a huge benefit to arriving and thriving and versus arriving and having people get tired of you before you meet your talent.
Yeah, and Hunter's done some up and downs.
Yeah,
and but you also look at it. I wrote about this last week. Hunter's pretty unique. He's 25 years old, which is not old in this game, and especially for a starting pitcher and the development and all that. He is probably, and I threw this by him, and he seemed to agree, he's probably thrown twice as many competitive pitches, if not three times, in the big leagues as anywhere else in the rest of his life.
Oh, sure. That's a great point. Yeah.
Because here's a guy who didn't pitch that much in high school. He's a two-way prospect.
Yeah.
They were very careful about his arm. In the minor leagues, again, they were careful his arm, and then he had Tommy John, so he missed a year. He's just learning about pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, and he is finally putting it in there. And that is something that is so easy to overlook because he has been in the big league since 2021.
Wow. Trent, what's it mean if they have Ellie De La Cruz and Hunter Green at their early peaks, which they might reach sometime this year? Certainly next year they might be both at their full strength, right? A fully operational Reds prospects Death Star, to put it in your Star Wars terms for you.
I've heard of this.
What happens if they leave a port open and the whole thing blows up without them winning here? What does that mean for Reds fans? What does that mean for Cincinnati if they have those two players, their peaks coinciding, and this ballpark isn't full, and this place isn't rocking, and that record doesn't break the gravitational pull of 500?
Well, I mean, the Angels feel better because they have somebody else to make fun of.
Yeah.
You know, they squandered Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. You know, and you're kind of talking the same thing, right? If that happens, and that would be a real shame. But it does happen. We've all seen it. Baseball's a weird sport like that. Just because you're Mike Trout and you have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, those two guys never played in a playoff game together.
Yeah. Where does, this isn't the first time that you look at the Reds roster and go, That's a good enough team to contend in this division, and yet they haven't, not consistently. They have in spurts. They have certainly had strong stretches. Even since Ellie De La Cruz has been here, they've had strong, assertive stretches, but not really put it all together into a season. Is that where Francona comes in?
That's the hope, yeah. And I think that's kind of one of those things. Like, okay, what does it take to get over the hump? And I mean, Terry Francona has shown that he has that capability. If it's not him, then that's not the issue, because he's done it everywhere. And it's been kind of fun to watch so far. I get such, because I was here, I've been here for a little bit, but like this spring, I just kept, like, I was telling everybody, it's like, I just get these Dusty vibes, because Dusty and Tito are both guys who are very secure in who they are and what they're doing. you know, it's just something that they're confident in what they do. They do what they do. Everybody knows. They're not worried about being second-guessed by the front office. That's just not in the back of their mind, or ownership, or whoever, fans, or whoever else. They are very comfortable in who they are, their decisions, and what they do. And I think that's a big thing for a manager, not to get distracted by all the other things and any of the other noise. And that's something that when you bring in a guy like Tito or Dusty, that's what you get. I mean, we saw it in Texas, too. You bring in
Bochy.
Yeah. You know, it was funny. We had that thing. I think when David Bell got hired, they were like, they interviewed like six guys, and all those guys got jobs that year. And I think the only one left still managing the same team is Rocco Baldelli of that group. And that was when we saw all these young guys. But then you saw Dusty win. You saw Bruce Bochy win. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, huh. And then Tito comes back. Yeah. And I just kind of like, I saw that. You watch that trend. And it seems like it's kind of the pendulum has swung back towards the experience name manager. Because a couple years ago, like, right? You know, we didn't see it. It wasn't like a thing. It was like, oh, who can, who will listen to the GM and, or Pobo or whatever.
Right. The Matheny trend, right? Like, Mike Matheny was hired because he was part of the organization, had been involved, had been kind of vetted over the course of the years by being around, and had both a track record, but also had upside potential. They saw this as a guy who could grow in the role while in the role. And then all of a sudden you saw a whole bunch of hiring. You know, he inherited a World Series team, which was helpful. But after that, then you saw like a whole bunch of players hired without any, you know, manager. Brad Ausmus was soon thereafter, and he's managed for two teams, you know, since then. But you're right. The pendulum is kind of swinging back.
I just want to note real quick that the Cardinals interviewed Tito Francona when their position was open, and they hired Mike Matheny. So back in 2011. So there's an element here too, Trent, where Cardinal fans get to see like almost like a what could have been, even though it never was.
Was it a surprise when the Reds hired Francona? Where did it come out of left field?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing was it was whether I think a lot of people, myself included, thought when Terry Francona retired, he was done.
Okay.
You know, because he was, that last year, he was not moving well. He was he was in rough shape physically. But, you know, it's funny. It's like I screwed up because I think back of it. Like, I remember Bruce Bochy's last year in San Francisco, and Bags and I were walking out after a game, and, like, we got stuck behind Boch, and that took forever because we were just watching him, and it was painful to watch him walk. I'm like, oh, man. And you know, I think Bags was like, yeah, I think this is going to be his last year and all this. And then he takes the time off, and then he comes back and wins a World Series, you know.
Right.
It's funny, there's a article that Zach Mizell and I, Zach and I wrote that in the print product of the New York Times today. How's that for a little
name dropper? That's really good.
That's my employer.
I know.
But it ran last week.
It's very exciting.
On Tito's birthday, actually, last week on the website. You can go to theathletic.com and find it. But it was just about how, like, he can't quit. I think that was the headline. Is why Terry Francona can't quit, or can't, keeps coming back to the game. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those that it's who he is. He's a manager, and that's where he is most comfortable. And it is where he just is. And it's he had a good year off. And it's funny, like, in that story we talked to, I talked to Marty Brenneman, a longtime Reds announcer, who's very good friends with Francona from their days together when Tito was a player here. And, you know, Marty said to me, he's like, yeah, visit him before spring training last year in 2024. And they're driving from Tito's in Tucson up to Goodyear, Arizona for Reds camp. And Marty said he looked at his wife, Amanda, and just said, he's never going to manage again. But yet, when David Bell got fired, the first person to call him about managing the Reds was Marty Brenneman.
Oh, interesting.
And Marty said, would you ever you know, I don't think so, but I just got to ask, would you consider coming back? Mm-hmm. And first of all, Tito didn't, I was like, why are you asking me? And they're like, well, the Reds fired Dave Belde. I was, oh. And so would you, you know? And his answer was, well, I would never say, I would never not talk to someone.
Interesting.
And so, and it kind of went from there. And Marty was like, would you mind if I contacted Nick Kroll, the Reds player of, president of baseball operations, and gave him your number if he doesn't have it? And Tito's like, yeah, sure. And it was done within a week and a half, you know. Mm-hmm. They knew that they had a chance to get Francona. Let's see, they fired David the Sunday before the last week of the season. So, with 1 week left in the season. And they did that because they wanted to kind of talk to all the guys on the team, mm-hmm. and get a sense and talk to everybody. And they didn't think it'd be fair to do that when David's still around. And so without him there, you know, they went to Cleveland, and that just happened to happen where somebody, like Kroll, said something to Nick wasn't on that in Cleveland, but Brad Metter, the GM, was. And Brad told me the story. He's like, yeah, Nick said, hey, what about Terry Francona? He's got some, may have some interest. Can you talk to some people in Cleveland? And so he went, Brad went upstairs after that and talked to Tom Hamilton for an hour.
Oh, wow.
And so the announcers were big in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which maybe says a lot about Tito. Those are the people that just know him and spend time with him. But yeah, so like they started talking about it, and then both were in Chicago, and I saw them take every single player. And they just sat down. It was pregame. It would be at the bench or whatever, and just ask them about things. And so they did that for that whole week. And I think in retrospect, there were so many people asking, well, why do it now? And their point was, well, if we've made the decision, why not?
Right.
And they didn't want David to be a dead man walking. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a big part of it. But it was also that ability to go and talk to a lot of the stakeholders, because this was a young team, because so much of the talent was guys who were at the beginning of their career that could be here for a while. Mm-hmm. They wanted to hear from them. And, you know, it's not to say that somebody goes, I want Terry Francona, and they went out and got Terry Francona. No, but they just still wanted to hear the process. They talked to every coach. They interviewed Freddie Benavides for the job, who was the bench coach under David Bell. He's the interim manager and now is one of two bench coaches the Reds have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is extremely interesting that they did that. And I think if you ask them, it is extremely beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
learned a lot of depth. I mean, by parallel tracking it, right? Like, what does this clubhouse need? Mm-hmm. What does this candidate find interesting? You kind of could see if they overlapped in a way, because you're having those conversations simultaneously.
What were the issues? What needs to be worked on? What was holding us back? What is important as we go? Especially, you know, Derek Johnson, the pitching coach, is a very well-respected pitching coach. Mm-hmm. He was under contract for this year, mm-hmm. already. And so he was sticking around. And that was something that they wanted. Like, whoever was going to be the next manager was going to inherit his pitching coach.
Do you have any sense from Francona's? And we should let folks know. I'm sure they've listened to it. Terry Francona goes by Tito. That's his nickname. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, most folks know that by him. But so a lot of folks will call him Tito, like, which was his dad. Do you get a sense from his perspective what made Cincinnati appealing? Was it the fact that the seat was open? Was there something about the team? Was there something about the proximity of his apartment to the ballpark? What was the appeal?
I think it started with the team.
Okay.
That he looked, you know, it's funny because the Reds didn't finish, it was 2 years ago, 2023, they finished in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Joey Votto's last game where he got thrown out in the first inning.
Right, right.
But before that, they were in Cleveland.
How about that? Just real quick, side Joey. That is, I hadn't put that together. I should have put that together. Joey Votto ejected from what ended up being his last game.
In the first inning.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, how does that go? Like, where does that fit? Like, is that something that, like, you have to, he had to find peace with?
I don't know. It's just Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, so I don't try to get in Joe's head because that's just not possible.
Sure.
So they were in Cleveland before that. And I just remember Ellie De La Cruz had kind of a little dip that rookie in, and then he had a 2-homer game there. And it is maybe one of the longest balls I've ever seen hit was there and against Cleveland. And I don't know. I think there was probably something in the back of Tito's mind. Like, you know, he saw Matt McClain. He saw this. He saw some things. But also, he'd been in Cincinnati as a player. Held a pretty special place for him. It was Pete Rose was the manager at the time, and he fought to get Tito, who was his teammate in Montreal, on the team. And, you know, it's kind of, I could see, you know, it's funny, he was in Boston, which is about the opposite media market as Cleveland and Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was something that's like, okay, Cincinnati's a lot like Cleveland in ways. He knew that they weren't going to be the Red Sox going out and spending a ton of money, you know, or doing anything like that. It seemed like a thing that he would be comfortable with. He saw a lot of that talent that we started this off talking about. And then, so it was like that first, it was like the season ended on a Sunday, Monday, that Monday night, Brad Metter and Nick Kroll flew out to Tucson. Mm-hmm. And that Tuesday after the, I guess it was at that wasn't the wild card day or anyway, the Tuesday after the season ended, they're in Tito's living room in Tucson, Arizona. And like Tito had said, hey, we'll fly to, you know, I can come up there, or we can go somewhere like Atlanta and meet halfway, which is what a lot of people do because there's direct flights from Atlanta to.
Sure. Yeah.
To you know, Timbuktu.
To the world.
Yeah. And I always joke that when I die, I'm going to switch planes in Hartsfield to go where they send me after that.
Okay.
So south.
You do always joke about that.
I'll continue south, yes.
To the Grapefruit League?
No. That sounds worse than the other place. A lot less driving in the other place.
I did set myself up for that.
But they were like, no, we'll come to you. Because they didn't want it to get out, and they didn't want to put any pressure on him.
Yeah.
If they came, whatever. So they go out to his house, and I think, you know, the way both of them tell it is within, like, 15 minutes to a half hour of talking, Tito started referring to, well, if we do this and we do that. Mm. And they're like, holy crap, I think he wants it. And they're like, if Terry Francona wants this job, like, who better?
Right.
And so, like, for them, it was like, they went in there like, okay. I think they almost felt like they had to sell themselves. It's almost the opposite of a job interview, right?
Yeah.
It was their recruitment. And we've both been there. You know, it's nice to feel wanted. And I think that happened, and you know, Tito saw some things he liked, and he felt really comfortable with Brad and Nick. And Brad and Nick are just good dudes, you know, and solid individuals. The story I tell about Nick Kroll, to point that out, is he won't fly first class. He won't buy a first class ticket. He's entitled to, you know, guessing most GMs will. But his thing is like, I can't look somebody in the face and say, we can't afford to give you a raise and then fly first class. He goes, I just won't do that.
That's interesting. John Mozeliak flies a lot of Southwest.
Yeah.
So there's not.
Probably. Yeah. But that is one of Nick's things. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's just a tiny little detail that shows you.
Yeah, I think that some guys do that in relation to their scouts too. Mm-hmm. Like I know that you're amateur scouts and stuff like that. Like I know you're grinding. We know your budget. We know what that's like. So I'm going to nicer cities, nicer hotels, but I'm not going to also like.
Yeah, do, yeah, that's yeah. What it was actually a side note. The late Walt Jocketty, I was talking to Sean Pender, who is with the Reds and has been with the Reds for a long time. And he said he remembers this one trip. They were going somewhere, and Walt and Kevin Towers, who was working for the Reds at the time, were flying. They were all on the same flight, and those two guys were in first class. And Walt asked Sean where he was sitting, and he was like, oh, you know, 27C or whatever. And Walt goes, let me see your ticket. And he takes it to the counter, swipes his own personal card, and says, you're not going to sit back there while we're sitting up here. Mm. And just kind of a side note on that one. That was kind of cool. But yeah, so that is, I think they just felt comfortable with each other.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
And then the next day, like, when they left that house that night, they both... Like, I think everybody just assumed it was like almost a, I don't know if it was completely a handshake deal, it was a done deal, but everybody felt like, hey, this is a done deal. And it, the next day that Bob Castellini, the owner, wanted to go out, flew out and met Tito, and it was all finalized that day.
That's pretty impressive. All right, we're sitting at Great American Ballpark. The rain delay is about to end, so... it's been nice spending it with you here. We'd be remiss because we've sat not too far from here and been in a conversation with the late Walt Jocketty. You know, Walt Jocketty died this past week there in Phoenix. Long illness, lots of fight for him, and spent a lot of time in the hospital during this time. He's beloved in baseball. He helped create a tremendous build what the Cardinals are today. They got because of what he and Tony La Russa built when the ownership change took place. $3 million in the stands, the expectation the Cardinals fans have for stargazing, all of it comes from a really ambitious general manager. When I look back, that's the best way that I could think of him. He has a lot of fans in baseball. Can you share with me a Walt Jocketty Cincinnati story? And I think Cardinal fans have a real good feel for where he fits, and he'll be getting a red jacket and inducted into the Cardinals Hall of Fame. Can you give me a sense of where he fits for the Reds here?
Yeah, you know, he came at an interesting time because for the Reds, you kind of think they won in 1990. And then they were pretty good throughout that decade for the most part, a little dip near the end, but then 99... they get this kind of surprise young team that goes to a one-game playoff and loses. And then they get Ken Griffey Jr. And what I think Walt's biggest contribution was moving from that era, new stadium, star power Ken Griffey Jr., the Ken Griffey Jr., Adam Dunn, hit it out of the ballpark, going from that era into a competitive era that they got in 2010 to 2014 when they made the playoffs three times in 4 years, including 2012, where I think they were probably the best team.
They were really good.
They just had, they had no injuries for much of the year, and then they had their injury at the exact wrong time.
That in 2015, it was like the Cardinals are on a collision course with a division rival. That's what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, 2012, that year, they used six different starting pitchers. The only, I think it was Greg Reynolds, maybe, who was the only one who wasn't one of their core five. Mm-hmm. And it was a game basically like yesterday, where it's the second game of a doubleheader after a rainout somebody. That was the only game that somebody else started. And then Johnny Cueto, their ace, gets hurt in the first inning of the first playoff game.
Right, yeah.
And that backed everything up, and they actually still won that game, and then they won the next game, and then they came back here for three.
With the Giants,
and, well, they had Matt Latos and Buster Posey. It does all that. And like, that was kind of took the air out. But Walt, I think the biggest move Walt made, may have been the biggest move he made twice, was in the year before 2010. 2010 is when they broke through, won the division. And they had this young group coming up. You had Jay Bruce, Joey Votto, Johnny Cueto, Edinson Volquez, Homer Bailey. That's kind of the same kind of thing, right? That we were just talking about, Hunter Green, Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, remember, Jay Bruce was the number one prospect in baseball. And Joey Votto was one of the other guys. And so they had that same kind of thing. And you also had pitching and Johnny Cueto and Volquez and Homer. And Homer was the highest rated, you know, and that's one of those things. It's like it was Jay Bruce and Homer Bailey were the saviors. And then it's Joey Votto, who's going to the Hall of Fame, and Johnny Cueto, who's being the Reds Hall of Fame. You know, so there's a similarity. But it was Walt Jocketty who kind of came in and looked at it and said, no, you know what we need? We need Scott Rolen. And Scott Rolen came in, and you'll hear Brandon Phillips, Jay Bruce, Joey Votto, all those guys just talking about what Scott Rolen meant to that team, mm-hmm. and how what they meant he meant for their careers. And so I think that's one of Walt's biggest things. He realized that. I was talking to Nick Kroll about that the other day when we were writing Walt's obit. That Nick still remembers. And he's like, why are we getting Scott Rolen? He's like, here's the numbers. Here's this. And Walt was like, no. We need this because it goes beyond the numbers and the culture and all those things. And Nick was like, I listened to him. I wasn't sure I believed him. Then I saw it. And he was right. You know, he was a big believer. Like, again, you know, he started with Sandy Alderson. He was with Sandy Alderson in Oakland. Yeah, I mean, this is the beginning of all the sabermetric stuff. And Walt wasn't dismissive of any of this. He was, you know, I kind of think about it. He's almost that. What we've settled on. Remember, there used to be the stats versus scouts thing. Mm-hmm. And it's always kind of been more a push-pull in the middle mm-hmm. that is. And Walt was very much in the middle during that time.
Yeah.
And I think that is the that bears out the success that he had. And so he's very favorably remembered here because he brought this franchise back.
Trent, thank you very much for this conversation. It's been great to spend the running delay with you. It's also fitting as we're doing this on May 1st, which means we're rising right towards Star Wars Day. When?
Well, I'm an Orthodox fan. I celebrate May 25th.
Oh, all right, okay. I just celebrate as much as possible. Okay.
I'm Orthodox. It's more. It's not about the pomp and circumstances. It's okay. Real stuff.
No, you're substance over style. I always say that. I do always say that about you. You are more substance over style.
What are you saying about my style?
Just that you're more substance. May the 4th be with you.
And with you.
That is C. Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic and The New York Times. You can find his work there online and in the print edition there. But if I get this podcast out today. But Trent, it's been great talking to you. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. It's available at scltoday.com along with all the constant Cardinals coverage there and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Sponsorships make the podcast possible and subscriptions make the sponsorships possible. So please rate and review the best podcast in baseball. This has been a great conversation. We got a ball game to go cover. Let's go see where this series takes us.
Didn't even make fun of how much older you are than I am.
You did not, no. But now you have.
Yeah. Tradition like no other.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.